Okay, it is 6 o'clock. I'd like to call to order the Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water. We have somebody from the public. Peter Tomei, would you like to talk?
Peter's
Thank you very much. My name is Peter Tomei. Longtime resident of Park City, like more than half my life, and just here to answer some questions, as I understood, regarding our proposed annexation petition for Junction Commons into Snyderville Basin Special Water. I'm sorry, Mountain Regional Special Service Water District.
We certainly had a lot of discussion about it at our last meeting. Do you have more information about whether it's going to be on the upper section or the lower section, or how many units?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I shared, I believe, with the board, I can review the entire MPD application with the board, to the extent they're interested. But in total, the vision for Junction Commons is to re-envision that outlet mall as kind of a mixed-use neighborhood under the county's new neighborhood mixed-use zoning classification. So we're pursuing a rezone, and the goal here is to basically repurpose these big, there's 1900 over 1900 stalls of surface parking. I think most of you have probably been there, seen the sea of asphalt, and try to make better use of that, consolidate and upgrade the retail into that lower unit, lower area, the lower loop, the larger loop closer to Landmark Drive, and then convert the upper loop area to a mixed income, primarily residential neighborhood, connected to the lower area. And then in the ultimately long-term plan, the lower area would end up getting the parking lot would get infilled a little bit with some mixed-use buildings, commercial ground floor, residential on upper floors, that would require structured parking, but then would allow the west side of Kimball Junction to basically have a little bit of a Main Street town, town center-ish feel. A little bit like Redstone may feel to some people on the west side of Kimball. I'm sorry, on the east side of Kimball Junction. So that's the vision at 100,000 feet. Let's take this, 1980s model of a fortress mall and kind of bust it open, make it a little bit more permeable to trails, and reduce the pervious surface there, and really introduce a lot of much needed mixed income housing. And so the plan is to have everything from about 100 units, well, actually, it ends up being 202 units of deed restricted affordable housing, some market rate apartment style units, and then some townhomes as well. So that's the overall development. We're currently served by Summit Water Distribution Company, and I don't think there's any mystery in the world about some of the challenges that Summit Water has. We have about 37 shares of Summit Water. We're currently using a tiny fraction of that available water, and I think there is we don't have I think a preconceived or preordained view of how ultimately it seems that I believe Mountain Regional Water is going to be the, could would be a far better water service provider for the entire area. And one of the elements necessary to accomplish that would be what would be also necessary to serve this project, which is a connection underneath the freeway, and which then would kind of come up through our property, really paralleling, I believe, the same, essentially the similar route that Summit Waters line would take. And that would open options to continue that line up to, you know, whether it was to loop through back through Redstone to serve the county and Dakota Pacific's public-private partnership site, or ultimately be able to serve some of the growing needs up at the Utah Olympic Park as well. So in addition to this project, it seems like it just overall improves the robustness of the mountain regional water system. In terms of how, you know, I think it's completely, you know, we would, you know, it's a matter of what works for, you know, we currently have operations that the facility, excuse me, will continue to operate through the redevelopment. So we need, you know, continuous water service and fire protection through the entire process. You know, we're not vacating. As you can see, we've already spent a tremendous amount of money and done some re-tenanting and upgrades to that lower section. Hopefully you've seen that. You know, so there is an extremely bright future here, but, you know, it requires continuous water service. So I think the intention is that we would continue through with Summit Water serving the project until we had an opportunity to switch over to a new supply. I think let me just pause there. I mean, I suppose I can pause there and see if you have questions so far, and then kind of share with you, if you would, my vision, you know, as how I could see this building out and a potential scenario for both the water service as well as the build out. Are there any questions so far? But, you know, I don't want to just drill a ton of information if you have some questions.
Hey, Peter, this is Corey Shorty. I've got a couple of big burning questions, but I guess the biggest one is, if you have 37 water shares with Summit Water and you're only using a fraction of them, where's the hang up with why Summit Water won't serve the additional capacity here? Is it line capacity? Is it treatment capacity? I'm under the impression that they could pipe water in from Park City Municipal to serve most of that, but I don't necessarily know the ins and outs of Mountain Regional system the way that these guys do, let alone Summit Waters. So,
right. Well, I don't, similarly, Corey, I don't understand with any kind of specificity that the intricacies of Summit Water system. I know that they have communicated with us in a letter I believe I've shared with Andy, that they were unable or uncertain of their ability to secure water, to deliver water in excess of the shares that we currently have. It was a, you know, that, you know, we'd have to purchase additional shares if they are available. They, you know, in conversations, they've raised questions regarding the validity or the actual wet water behind those shares. And then there were, you know, very significant infrastructure improvements that They would need to go beyond the 37 shares that we currently have.
Would those be on-site or off-site infrastructure improvements?
Off-site is my understanding. They would need additional pumping and additional tank specifically is my understanding in order to go in order to go beyond the 37. And they were even hedging in conversations with our engineers. They said essentially anything beyond what we had, there were absolutely no guarantees that they could get there. And they're not in the business of securing or supplying water. They're just a conveyance. So our concern was, clearly that's not, we wouldn't be able to deliver the vision that we have for this project without a path to adequate supply, because I believe, we came up, between Snyderville Basin and some work that Mulholland Engineering and I believe they've conferred with Mountain Regional as well, that we have about 250 ERUs of water is what we would need at build out. We don't need that day one, but we would need that at build out. They don't, there was not an obvious path to get to that through Summit Water. Now, in terms of how I envisioned this, the way the development plan is essentially leading with the residential, and within the residential, leading with the affordable. So the first thing that would happen is the upper loop, that smaller area, would be demolished, and we would start building with the first building built there would be about 110 unit affordable housing building, 100 to 110 unit affordable housing building. Depending upon the timing, the belief is that there may be adequate water with the demolition of over 100,000 square feet of existing space, basically one third of the center. It preliminarily it looked like we could deliver the affordable building through Summit Water if we had to, in terms of timing. But to go beyond that, we would need additional water. And so I think there clearly seems to want to be a clear demarcation line. So, maybe whether the entire project at some point switches over, I don't know if that's practical or how that works in practice. Water's not, I'm not a water guy, other than, experience over the last few years. And back in my Canyons days. Another scenario would be that they simply limit Summit Water to the lower loop, ultimately, and then make all of the new construction, new residential in the upper loop, make that or connect that to Mountain Regional, should we be successful getting annexed into the Mountain Regional system and deliver, developing the necessary infrastructure to do so. Did that answer your question, Corey?
I'm not sure. So my follow-up to that is kind of more of a statement of how I understand things over here. And I'm going to invite Andy and Sam or anybody else to just kind of interrupt me if I get it wrong, because they know it way better than I do. But this summer specifically, the system, the mountain regional system, was stretched really, really thin already. And the idea of bringing on an additional, we'll call it 600 bedrooms, pillows, you know, if you want to do 280 residential equivalents, that's fine too. It makes me nervous, and I don't understand what incentive there is to Mountain Regional to take on that additional risk. If our system, from a pumping perspective, already gets stretched to the max, you know, 3 months out of every summer, to take over Summit Water's responsibility as our own, it just gives me a whole lot of pause when I still don't understand why Summit Water can't do it.
And further to that, I didn't realize the aspect that they have excess shares, but Summit won't deliver on those. That kind of changes things for me a little bit. Like, doesn't Park City have excess water and they have a wheeling agreement with Summit?
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand that letter from Summit saying they can't serve them.
Based on that letter, it sounds like it's an
infrastructure. Nor do I. I think one of the items, Corey, to try to make you feel better, and which is one reason why I think this could be a good citizen, if you will, to the system, is that the summer, you know, when Mountain Regional is stretched in the summer, the lion's share of that is irrigation uses, I believe. And this project will have virtually no irrigation uses. And so we're not going to have, you know, the seasonal flow differences, as, you know, a largely mixed use environment, that single family residentials with, you know, with manicured grass lawns would have, or other uses where there's extensive irrigation. So our summertime load is, you know, I would not, you know, is not going to be peaky like the balance of your system. So, you know, that's one thing I would hope that would help mitigate some of the fear. You know, I know that, you know, in a big picture, you know, it was, I was unaware that there was this capacity constraint this, you know, this past summer. You know, so that is, you know, that's new information to me. So if this is, you know, then maybe this, you know, maybe there's not a path forward. But it does seem to me that longer term, I think it seemed that getting the ability to loop the system, bring on potentially, you know, whether there's opportunities to, you know, consolidate or bring other users to the table that could be the benefit of the overall system, potentially off-season users, like the UOP with some of their incremental development, because I believe they're in somewhat of the same problem. They have I believe wheel water for Summit, but, you know, Summit's wet water and their ability to have the amount of wintertime snowmaking they want, to my understanding is a challenge for them. So, you know, in my ideal world, I was thinking, wow, this could be a win-win for, you know, for everyone if we were able to start a connection. Maybe my understanding was wrong, or my idealism is misplaced.
And our intent right now is to get information. It's not to debate the issue, right? That's the next step.
Sure. So, yeah, I don't, and it's, I'm not in a position to debate because I don't, you know, I don't have the intimate knowledge, Corey, that you do. So I'm, you know, I was just telling you what my understanding was and what our plan was based on that understanding.
I have a couple questions. It sounds like Summit Water can serve up to the 37 shares. It's just the conceptual plans that they've looked at go above that number, and that's where the deficiency lies. Is that correct?
Okay. Correct. That's my understanding.
Second question.
But they can purchase additional shares.
They could purchase. Sorry. They just don't have additional shares to purchase, but they can serve the 37 that they currently have.
And they could purchase additional shares.
That may be in question.
That would be served by Wheeling Park City Water.
Yeah, if the shares are available, and I think that's the wild card.
Doesn't say they're not.
Right. That was the you know, the concerning piece here was if available. And in speaking with, you know, some others in the county, a couple of county commissioners, I think there was also concern about the actual ability to deliver on, you know, on shares.
Do you have those numbers available? I know you said you have 37 shares. How many are you using now, and how many do you anticipate using at build out?
I can, let's see, in terms of actual shares, I'm not sure how the shares equate to, Mulholland Engineering. I can work on getting that. Let me try to get that answer for you right here. Hold on one second.
Tell Christian it's Corey asking.
What did we figure out?
Total big affair all in.
Yeah, so maybe there's some discussion about just overall water demands, and I can pull those up. Okay, sorry.
I think the G graph somewhere.
I got it up. But Dave Hughes, who works with Chris Mulholland, provided range of 122 to 155 acre at build out. And then if we assume, to Peter's point, if this doesn't sound peaky, I like your term, by the way, Peter Peaky. I think that
highly technical for term, I'm sure.
So assume just like a reasonable peaking factor, that's something like 192 to go in the summer. So 155 acre feet annually. No idea how that equates to some water share. Sorry.
So it'd be 90 more than that. Or
yeah, it's 37, 10
more. Shares an acre foot.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see. Yeah.
Sorry. What was that conversion?
One share of Summit Water equals 1 acre foot.
Okay, that was my recollection. Okay, thank you.
Four times the amount.
Right.
They got quadruple
quarter. And a quarter to start the cost. And so it sounds like a quarter of that project could serve, let's call it your first phase, which is the affordable. You're thinking that could remain with Summit Water.
It's a timing issue more than anything else. You know, that I think there's a great, if this project receives approval, I think there's a great interest and appetite within the county to have, deed restricted, you know, a new source of deed restricted affordable housing in a location, you know, that's just a textbook walkable. You know, it's close to the transit center. It's close to three grocery stores, Walmart. You know, I mean, it's just so this is kind of the ideal location for affordable housing that should mitigate some traffic problems in the area as well. So the goal is to get that building going as quickly as we can. And, you know, envisioning, not understanding the process of all of the UDOT or Department of Transportation approvals necessary to go underneath the freeway, I'm assuming that takes longer than hopefully it may take us to get approval to build the affordable housing. So my interest is to try to accelerate that the creation of that affordable housing, and that's why I was assuming that we may have to try to size that building appropriately to be sure that it could be served under the capacity that we currently have, or theoretically have. Does that make sense?
Peter, if that's okay. This is Steve Anderson. I'm with Mountain Regional. So there will be an investment to go under the freeway, highway, and connect to our system. It looks like Summit Water's distribution company is kind of saying, well, if you invested and bought us, you know, build a storage tank and bought some shares, we might be able to do it. Do you have cost estimates on going under the freeway, connecting to us, and also what it might cost for to do that with Summit Water? Are we a better value for you, let's say, or are they a better value for you?
Think that we have cost estimates for going under the freeway and connecting to your system with the upgrades necessary to the best understanding of Christian Mulholland and David his partner. One of the challenges of quantifying the cost associated with going with Summit Water is that they're not exactly sure what's necessary. And there remains this question, of whether shares will be available. And candidly, you know, if we were going to be investing, if, you know, that these sums of money, you know, seven figure sums of money, I would rather be investing in Mountain Regional Water, to be candid with you, than Summit Water, because I have greater confidence in the Mountain Regional's ability to deliver. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of a risk adjusted. I view hooking our train to Summit Water as highly risky.
Okay. Thank you.
Particularly if it involves, you know, millions of dollars of expense that may or may not turn out to water coming out of our tap. Not to be dramatic, but that's kind of my fear.
This is a really uneducated question, mostly for Sam. Do we have instances where Summit Water operates within our district boundaries currently, aside from just transmission?
Yes, and we have overlapping pockets that I would say are within. Like, what's the neighborhood just was to Willock?
Snyder's Mill.
Blackstone is probably the best.
That's
a condo project where they serve one of the buildings, we serve two.
Yeah. I'm sure that creates headaches when something breaks and you don't know whose equipment broke.
And there's hydrants directly across from each other. One Summit's, one's ours.
Okay, sounds like we are debating it right now. Oh, so this is Ian Schofield. There was some discussion last board meeting about risk associated with going under the highway, and we have other options. They cost more. you looked at that anymore since last board meeting?
I have not.
Okay.
No. Yeah, I think, Peter, the bigger discussion would be if we were going to connect to the system, I think we'd look at metrics besides just the bottom line on which is cheaper. Try to quantify additional risk, for example, pulling under a federal highway.
And my main question
I'm not sure I heard all of that. Your voice kind of trailed off there. I wasn't able to hear you.
I think the general idea is when we get closer to evaluating the transmission line alignment, I think we're going to look at factors besides just dollars, besides the bottom line, try and quantify it.
For sure. I'm assuming you want to look at what builds your best, most robust, long-term system.
Yeah. Yeah. Least amount of risk. And that's my main question is, like, with the risk side, we determine the risk. Mountain Regional decides where that connection will go. So everybody keeps talking about going under the highway, but it's not Peter's choice. It's not anybody else's. It's Mountain Regional's. Right?
Yeah, and I think I want to make explicit what I hear being said in the room is that I don't know that you can put a price to what it's going to cost to connect to Mountain Regional system today, because were the annexation to be approved, Mountain Regional would put conditions on that they get to choose the route that's most resilient from making that connection, not the route that's most direct and cheapest.
I think that seems completely reasonable that that we would understand that, and I think we would want to. You know, in an ideal world, I fully understand that. I mean, that you guys, it's your water system at the end of the day, and you have to do what's best for your water system.
Great.
So the ask tonight would be if discussion is done, would be to make a recommendation one way or the other to the county council, positive or negative, and then we take it to the council, and the council decides if they're in agreement or not.
Well, it seems like the council is kind of behind us trying to find a way to make this work, just from the discussion.
I'm not sure I understand that comment.
Well, he was saying something about that some of the council members had asked him to reach out to us about possibly providing the water in the absence of Summit Water being a reliable partner. I certainly am concerned that the two engineering types on the board seem the most concerned.
I guess I had concern last board meeting, and so I agree with the general consensus to kind of push this out. After what I've heard right now, and thinking about it a little more, I actually have more concern than last board meeting. I see this as a Summit Water problem that hasn't been run to ground. And I don't feel it's Mountain Regional's responsibility to prop them up artificially.
Yes, what can it be? I agree with you wholeheartedly. Okay. I think that's a great way to frame it. My biggest reservation is that were we to make a recommendation to annex and were the county council to agree and annex it into the district, I worry that all of these conditions that we've just talked about, the routing, the resiliency, would procedurally evaporate. I don't know if it will. I don't know if it won't. But I worry that it could, by virtue of annexing. Does that just move us beyond several steps that we just aren't seeing?
I don't think it
I didn't think that annexation was just because you're in the annexation boundary. I didn't believe that it's not like it constitutes a will serve. I mean, that's another level of diligence that we have to get to, which is, can you and will you serve the property?
So the question tonight is not will we be able to, or will we choose to serve them, is will we annex them into the district?
Which is the last
option. Will that be an option to go through this project property, come to and through this property is really the question.
But
since they're annexed, any signature on the plan guarantees service, which does not go back in front of the board or the council. Okay.
The project would have to get replatted. We would have input there. We would have input through the ISA, where we can capture other things. It does not mean if the recommendation is to annex or that are annexed in, that they will choose to be served by us or we have to serve them. It's just we could serve them. We get bound when we put our name on the plat.
But what obligation do you have to sign the plat?
Well,
is definitely not none, but I don't know if it's between obligated and none.
I mean, the idea is that there are two flash points. One is the signing of the plat, which says that you're able to serve them. And then building permit is the will serve letter that says you will serve them. You're kind of ratcheting it up, but if you're annexed into the district, there is some expectation that at some point in time, you're going to be able to serve.
And that's kind of my concern, I think, if I understood that right, is that if they're annexed in and then they design a development that meets the very minimum standards of Mountain Regional specifications, does Mountain Regional still have an opportunity to not sign that plat? And I would believe that the answer is no if the development meets the minimum baseline specification.
Yeah, and if you have capacity, if you've got enough water, then yes.
So in my mind, annexing is the equivalent of forfeiting any conditions to the development.
And you'll still be able to, through the ISA, you would still be able to make the different choices. So, for example, the infrastructure, the offsite infrastructure choice, where the transmission line is going to go, that's still within the decision-making of Mountain Regional.
I just don't know if I agree with that statement, because if the developer were to propose a solution that meets the specifications, Mountain Regional can request and recommend an alternative, but I don't know that they could deny it if it met their specifications.
You don't deny it. You make that as a condition. The condition of signing the plat of going forward is this is the alignment. And we've done that before.
And you feel like you have that kind of teeth still at that point?
Yeah, you can still do that. But it is you are kind of ratcheting things up. Mm-hmm. Because the first step is getting the district. Then the next is signing the plat.
Because Peter, you're held up right now because you don't have a will serve letter from Summit Water or us. So you're trying to get to a will serve letter so you can start something, right?
No, we're not in pursuit of a will serve letter at this point. Because we're very premature, we don't have zoning, we don't have a subdivision, we don't have, there are multiple steps. The project has to get replatted, has to get subdivided. And then there has to be specific, you know, there's a development agreement that's negotiated with the county. And then there are specific permits for each building that comes online. So the will serve wouldn't come until we were ready to get toward building permits, which, you know, my previous understanding was that we had all of the time to then figure out whether it made sense for Mountain Regional to serve this project and potentially others, you know, as well as trying to further, although, you know, we've attempted, you know, there was a comment earlier that we haven't run the play to ground with Summit Water. And, you know, we've attempted to do just that, but they've been really unable to categorically and, you know, state what is necessary and what they can and cannot do. They basically just said, they've thrown up their hands and said, yeah, we can't currently do this, and we don't know what it's going to take. And, you know, historically, I think there have been more shares in Summit Water circulating than there is actual water behind them, which is something historically that's been a bit of a challenge in the area. So I don't believe that my understanding and wasn't that the annexation constituted a will serve really in any way, shape, or form. It just said that we are in an area that you could serve. And you could serve if, in fact, all of the conditions that you require were met. And it's then up to Mountain Regional to set those conditions. And that's an evaluation at that point in time, whether this project, you know, goes forward or whether it stays as a retail center, as is today, because the demand is, you know, with the good news, bad news is that now with all of the improvements we've done in the lower level and getting Shake Shack and Chipotle and all those people there, now we're more tenants want to be there, and we're out of space. We're desperately trying to hold on to this space on short-term tenancies in the upper loop to keep our options to do this project. But at some point, we'll just have to say, oh, maybe this isn't meant to be, and it's going to stay this way for the foreseeable future.
Shake Shack over there.
Don't tell my husband.
So, I mean, that's just the reality of my, you know, my partners have owned the, you know, they've owned the project for 7 years, I think, 7 years, 8 years. And, you know, it's just taken a lot of discipline to slowly position the center to even contemplate a redevelopment like this, to be able to, you know, because when you sign a lease with someone like Nike, they basically control your property for, you know, 15 or 20 years. So we've had to, you know, allow those leases to run their course and then keep them on short-term renewals so that we have the opportunity to relocate them into the lower area of the project and free that land for redevelopment as a housing community. I mean, as a housing advocate, that's been my involvement here. That's kind of my play.
Do we have any further discussion, or do we?
I'm better able to talk affordable housing than water. If you want to talk about affordable housing, I'm more than happy to talk about that.
Do we want to move to item number two, which would be the consideration or recommendation of approval of the annexation of the parcel into the service area of the district.
I don't have a reason to say let's not move on because I think I'm out of questions, at least questions that can be resolved here and now.
I think I have enough information to vote on it, yeah.
Okay. Would somebody like to make a motion?
Do we need to move to close public input?
There was. I think there was public input.
That wasn't public input?
That was easy applicant.
Okay. All right.
I'm not comfortable with it.
Okay. I'll try to say this correctly. I will move to provide a negative recommendation of approval of the annexation of parcel FSE1 into the service area of the district by the Summit County Council.
In favor of that.
That's second.
Is that a second?
Second.
Okay, so all in favor of a negative recommendation
of approval.
Of approval.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. I will make it unanimous. So it's unanimous. We are not going to move forward.
So we will take that negative recommendation. I will take that negative recommendation to the county council. So Peter, we just need to get on that county council agenda, and I'll let you know when that happens.
Very good. Okay. Well, thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Peter. I realize this is difficult, but I appreciate you giving us more color on this.
Very good. Well, I apologize. I wasn't able to better answer your questions for a different outcome, but thank you for your time and consideration.
Okay, with that, I do believe we need to go into executive session.
Litigation and personnel.
Motion to move into executive session for litigation and personnel.
Second.
One has to be recorded and one does not.
Yes, correct. So go into
litigation.
Oh, should we do one and then come out and go back into another?
Right? Yeah.
Which one do you want to do first? Okay. Motion to move into executive session for litigation.
Second.
Hey, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that's unanimous.
Okay, motion to go into executive session to talk about personnel.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I made a motion to exit executive session, seconded by Ian.
And we were all in favor, so it was unanimous. So now we're on to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any changes to the meeting minute?
I do not.
No.
Does anyone have any questions on the check register?
I have a couple. I'll try to go fast. Remind me on the landscape removal program. It gets divided out between Weber Basin and Conservation. How does that metric work? So I was noticing there was like four this month. And yeah, it switches between which one's more or less between Weber and Conservation.
It should have always been 2/3, 1/3.
Oh, crap. Right. Yeah, I regret one of them then.
Yeah, Weber Basin pays $1, the state pays $1, and we pay $1.
And we get.
So okay. We bill Weber Basin, and then they collect. Okay. So it's 2/3, 1/3 best.
And how many have we had so far this year?
We've had, I believe, 4 or 5.
We had four this month.
For this month.
Yeah.
Okay, so then we might have been one before. It all kind of came at the end. And then I have one more sitting on my desk.
It's been slow, but we had our largest incentive paid up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That one you probably saw for about $24,000.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. He did a nice job.
Nice spot. Yeah, he did really, really nice.
It'd be fun to see some
pictures.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we have a ton.
It doesn't need to go up in four packets. Down something that would go.
That would be good.
I saw we had a bunch of DOT physical drug test type things. The one said non-DOT post-accident, comma, one DOT other. What's the DOT other? Is that one drug-related?
I'm sorry, I missed that one. I am not sure.
It was $100, workforce, QA.
It said non-vehicle accident as well.
But then it said one non-DOT post-accident, one DOT. Oh, is that the physical is the other? Or?
Oh, physical.
Yeah, they did have, we did have a physical.
Well, those don't go through
workforce. No, those don't.
Yeah, Intermountain.
Intermountain Net is DOT physical.
Yeah.
DOT physical.
But Mike had his physical last month.
What was the one other?
I don't know. There was an accident, and
there are two people in the vehicle, so one was the driver, supposed to have someone was the driver.
Okay.
All right. While you're looking at Rockport Rocks, custom screen for LC booster, what was that?
Do you want to do the report?
Oh, so it's down Lost Canyon on the intake side. Jess and Sam had come up with the idea of putting some screens in on the intake side. The openings are
in the river?
No, right before the pump, on the header in the pump.
Okay.
Intake. And they're trying to change the size of the screen. So Rockport Rocks was doing a custom screen to test it with. So.
All right. Thank you. Side question on LRE water on the ASR project. So we staying with LRE or are we moving on?
So I think next month we're going to do an artist with Cooper, a geologist.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, Flynn and LRE are pre-qualified to work on our geology project under his screen.
Yeah. But our one having geologists paid to another firm.
Yeah.
So
we are still moving forward with the ASR effort at Atkinson and some staff at LRE. Are looking at its feedback on the designs of it put together for drinking water, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And this current period.
That's LRE wheelhouse. Yeah,
there's some people out of Phoenix that are pretty sharp and they work out of drums.
Okay, cool. Glad to hear that. We're not just moving around super fast.
No, yeah, we'll be deliberate.
Okay.
But ours, if you have square everybody.
Cool. And then the SWCA archaeological study for the Withia.
Part of the Withia.
At the treatment plant?
Yep.
We already done an ARC study at the treatment plant?
There's never one done, to my knowledge.
Okay.
So it's the first.
And was it just for the, like, the expansion footprint?
Well, yeah, it was the whole parcel.
Oh, okay. So let's think of that as an expensive report for just that. Okay, that makes more sense. And then on the credit cards, remind me, we don't have a requirement for steel filled boots for employees.
You mean they're supposed to? Yeah. Steel toe, soft toe, yeah, depending on their working situation.
Okay, they can have soft toe.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have required to wear steel toe all the time.
Okay. All right. I just saw some really nice Tentrex boots. I'd love to have a pair, but I have it wear like around regional. Williams made a payment to Summit County Planning and the building department.
Yeah.
For what?
I don't know. $350 on the credit card.
Those are road out of steps. Yeah.
Road tab application.
We have an FLE.
Yeah. We're going to submit a plan.
I know we have to pay them once in a while, but aren't we all on the same team?
It's gone up this year quite a bit. It used to be two. That's gone three.
Yeah, and then they were trying to get us to pay,
Do
we have to pay for road cuts if we're repairing a line for an emergency?
Yes. We're like when they're out of road.
Very interesting. After the fact.
Okay, and then the last one was Blomquist gold standard diagnostics. Remind me, what's HAB sample?
I asked
this one is for algae.
Okay. That was on my list.
Right? Okay. I thought that one might come up. It was an acronym.
Yeah.
So that's why I asked.
So this is gold standard diagnostics, and Steve can get a gold star.
Thanks. That's very good.
That's it.
Here, one was post-accident, and one was the DOT random.
Oh, okay.
Just, I don't know why it said other. It should have been it's a random.
Sorry.
I had two questions.
Thank you.
What are we doing to Summit Park well number 7? So we had SKM engineer for $5,200.
So the chlorine addition to that well. So we rehabbed all the electrical for the well earlier this year. And then Sam had done the chlorine, the physical structure for the chlorine room. And this is all the programming for the PLC and so forth. So,
right.
When's it go live?
We're missing some pieces. We're supposed to go live this week, but we're missing a few pieces. The chlorine analyzer, a couple weeks.
So it wasn't a date in Sam's things.
And I'm assuming we will hear about the conservation plan that you guys had lunch about?
Next month.
Okay.
We'll have to have a public hearing.
Yeah. And then we've got the purchase order for the trucks.
Yes. So this is for, as you recall, we kind of changed how we do, we approve the budget. We don't spend that money until the end of the year. These will probably not be delivered till the beginning of next year. So what it is it's one smaller truck because we're kind of working those into the system for the people who commute longer and who don't necessarily need a big truck. And then three of them are getting bed deletes where we take off the bed that would have come. We don't pay for that. Because we're going to put our own custom bed. Two of them are kind of the typical flat one you'll see. The other one is for a crane truck because we're going to get a new crane truck because our crane truck's getting really old. And then there's kind of one standard one. So that's Black Ridge Fleet is the one who will basically outfit all these trucks for us when we come in. This is, we had allocated $433,000. We spent a little bit, but this is still under the budgeted allocation from last fall for trucks purchases this year. So just, yeah. So now that we're actually to that, we're going to place our order. We have to make sure you guys sign your purchase orders.
Ready for a motion?
Yeah.
Motion to approve the consent agenda as discussed.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That's unanimous. All right. We're on to page 2.
Okay.
Okay. Steve, tell us about September.
September continued much like the rest of the year up to this point, where usage was high, revenue was high, so we continued to build to our positive position. We are up to $3.87 million, better than budget. As you'll see, $3.1 million of that is from revenue, kind of a combination of operating revenue from water sales and also, as we've kind of talked about, we hand budgeted for the IRS direct payment that got added in, and interest has stayed high and funds didn't spend out quite as fast on some capital projects. So that's the other reason revenue is doing really well. Expense were below budget by 6.8%. You will see over to the right, we're 3.3% above budget. Above last year. So kind of a 3.3% growth. We pray the budget was maybe a little high. As we get to the budget presentation, you'll see I've taken some of that out. Let's say we're not doing as aggressive an expense increase as we have because we seem to have built up where we tend to have a little too high. So we're going to run a little tighter ship next year, let's say, but you'll see that coming up. Okay, let's go. I don't want to spend too much time on this because I think it's more important we spend it on the rate increase and the budget. But the other, just really quick, the development-related collections below budget, that is a factor of the accounting change that was made after the budget last year with the promontory assessments. Our meter installations are a little slower than planned, but impact fees are fine and everything, but that's really more of a function of that. Water sales for the first 9 months, that $1.67 million, basically is because when we get to usage, you'll see why.
But can I clarify one thing on here too?
Yeah. So
irrigation is like public areas of condos and things like that, and then irrigation golf is just golf.
Is just golf. So irrigation golf is just promontory. Irrigation is other people have irrigation, like a Blackstone or something where they irrigate a common area that we just have. But that is culinary water versus the irrigation golf is raw water. Okay, let's keep going. Let's see. Expenses, we're doing well. The one where we're over is the bond issuance because of the deposit we made, but everybody else is doing really well being under budget. Going to make it a little harder for them to be under budget, let's say, next year as much. All right, let's keep going. And cash, the big is the current month. We actually went up because we collected a lot of those summer revenues, and we actually did make a payment open. It was the previous month, and we'll make one now. So that was just a chance to kind of build cash back up. If you do look at compared to last year, you'll see the drop of because of all the cash we spent on the building. That's why that dropped from last year. Capital budget, we'll get into this a little bit more. Everything is looking well, is looking good, sorry. The savings from Old Ranch will be applied to treatment plant expansion to help pay to keep pushing design forward.
How did we cut that in half? Is it just that the project's going to take less time? Or
we did some of it internally that could, if we did it externally, it would have cost more. And then just, you know, as everything seemed to come in below what we early estimates, let's say.
Thanks.
So, all right, let's go on to customer growth. We are up to 95 new connection requests for the year. So 21 above last year, still below the four-year average, but once 2021 drops off, our four-year average will seem more normal. But 95 is good. It's at least better than last year. And we're at 33 assessments in promontory versus 17. The one thing that's a little different is our impact fees are lower this year than last year. And that's kind of a mix of, remember last year we had the big one from the school, about $190,000, that threw off the average, let's say. But we also tend to get a little bit smaller properties coming on now at a higher rate than bigger properties before. Maybe they were more one-to-one. Now it's skewed towards smaller properties or smaller buildings. Water consumption, kind of going back to. So in September, we were 26% above the four-year average. And if you go down a little bit, we're 37% higher than the four-year average. So again, highest usage year we've seen in a long time. When we get to the budget, you'll see our little per culinary connection. You'll see we had an increase 2 years in a row for the first time since like before 2017. So let's go down the appendix, the whole, you know, a little more detail on revenue and expenses, the cash in more detail about where all that cash actually sits, the individual accounts is the next appendix. This is what I give you quarterly just to kind of see where I build all the numbers from. And then the last page is just the graph. You'll see that
there was so we have $1 million in other deposits. I just wondered what that was.
That is mainly contractors, developers, but put cash on deposit with us instead of bonding for it.
Oh,
there's a few of them push their credit limit, so it's actually easier, it seems, for them to put cash to insure their project than to actually go out and bond for it. So, unfortunately, all the interest we earn on that, we give back to them with their deposit, so we don't get a consent. So even though September was higher just because of magnitude, the difference isn't as high, but there's still that gap that's a little higher than what would have been budgeted because usage was higher, but not as big a gap as you saw in June, July, and August. All right. Third quarter, kind of a lot of the same again, or through the third quarter. But the good position is we have good places to put the money we're making into capital projects, and we'll hit those as we go through the budget too. Good on the third quarter?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you.
You bet. We're going to do the rate discussion first because that kind of, I think that's how it's on the agenda. Maybe, is that the next
one? With the other rate.
Yeah, it was with the
other rate.
Give you whatever you want.
WIFIA, they were furloughed, the people working on our loan. The attorney working with WIFIA is still getting the checklist taken care of. Lisa's answering a lot of questions and giving him some schedules and things like that. Doesn't mean it can't happen. Fortunately, we have a nice window. We weren't planning to draw on WIFIA funds till beginning of 27, earliest maybe 26, if construction we can get going early. So even if WIFIA is out of office for a month and then they're 2 or 3 months catching back up on everything they're behind on, if we were able to still get positive feedback and know we could close June or July, we're great. I'd be more scared if it was one of these where they have several of them who are probably counting on this money to start something at the beginning of 26. We don't need this money until the end of 26 to get going. So hopefully, as long as the program stays funded and things like that, we'll can just continue down the path with WIFIA. We are exploring a plan with Brian Baker. If we had to go to market, what would it cost? How much can you push things out? He sent me some preliminary estimates. As you may recall, part of the magic of WIFIA is the 5-year delay from substantial completion before the first payment, which really let us ease in the rate increases. Okay. We would probably have at least 1 year with this rate increase in the teens. It would just be kind of unavoidable.
Yeah.
Once we did that, we could kind of go back to more of a flat 3 to 5% increase. It's just kind of getting up to where servicing that debt or revenue effort. A little premature, but just so you know, we're not putting all our eggs in that basket. We are thinking about what do we do if for some reason the WIFIA loan doesn't happen. Make sense?
We can't get our $25,000.
We can't get our $25,000 back. Okay. So that was WIFIA update one. Fitch rating. The nice thing is we went through Fitch. We maintained our rating. We maintained a AA rating, which for a company our size, they call us a company, no, we're not really, but for who we are, that's a pretty good, because just without size, it's hard to get much higher than AA.
There's no borders here. You can say whatever you want.
Okay. The nice thing is we had been warning Fitch, well, not warning, but we've been giving them our capital improvement plan. That included a treatment plan that we were planning to do. Obviously, costs are coming in a little higher, but they knew we had been thinking about it, knew we had a way to pay for it, like the WIFIA loan and all that kind of stuff. So I think all of that played together with maintaining our AA, that they didn't just downgrade us, well, now you're more of a debt risk. They said, no, you knew what was happening, you planned for it, you're good. So that's how we were able to maintain the AA.
Were we ever the highest?
We were at AA plus for just a little bit.
Remember that? I think at some point during my tenure, but it was
bad. Yeah. I think we went AA minus to AA to
A. Up to A. I don't think we ever went to AA.
We never got the plus. We got a positive outlook on that. Yeah.
But
so
then started telling him about the treatment. They started stabilizing us.
Yeah. And they were, what they're seeing is that we would go out of their range where they would normally keep a AA for a little while, but we will quickly go back into it.
Yeah.
They see the spike in capital, but they know long-term we want to maintain that kind of situation. So, okay. Water rates. In your packet, I provided a memo to try to explain it a little bit. Three potential scenarios.
Yeah.
Kind of one of flat, which is basically what we talked about last month. One that's a little more aggressive tier, where the base only gets 1.5%, the highest tier gets 17.5%, kind of explain. That's a little riskier scenario, just because if for whatever reason, drought, rain, whatever, usage drops, then we built revenue into the high tiers that we may not get to as much. And then, as I described it, a hybrid, where we do give some to the base, and it is slightly tiered, but not as tiered as much.
And that was kind of the conversation last board meeting a little bit.
Yeah, that was the conversation. Like, let's see
You
know, what we can do. So let's go ahead and pull up the spreadsheet real quick and just talk about it. Yes. I'm going to jump. Should I take it?
Go for it.
Okay, let's see what I can. What kind of trouble is this? Let's jump to the spreadsheet. Well, but yeah, but the live, we can play with data if we wanted.
Sorry, I just jumped.
Because I know we kind of want to talk about magnitude of how much money's in each tier and overall. So let's look at, this is the model. This doesn't have any rate increase built in yet. So down here, basically scenario 1, 2, we're trying to get to basically 12.9394 million. That's what I need to generate from water revenue. Then you add on Promontory, Golf, Park City, Wheeling, and all our other sources to get to where we need to be revenue. But this is what we need to generate from these. So scenario 1 here, you know, you can see a little more in base. It generates what we need. You can see where I kind of talked about the second tier, that.
You want that bigger? Can you make that bigger?
Everyone wants that abstract.
Yeah.
Because you can't.
I believe you.
You believe? Okay. We'll see. We may have to size each of these sheets as we get to them, as I jump back and forth.
That's great.
Okay. So the goal is basically, and Lisa helped run some of this, we got to get to this number. How do we get there? So the first one was kind of what we talked about last month. You'll see 9.9 comes from residential, a little over 2 million from commercial, and then about 900,000 from standby. This would be the one with the least risk, because most it's flat, base is the highest it is, but it does push our base rate that's currently 73 up to 75.5 for next year. So not without its merits, kind of what we planned on, because we did a big tiered one the rate before. So kind of going across, this was the 2024 rate, the rate increase we did last year, our current rate, what the new rate would be if this was the percentage increase. This is the number of gallons the model is projecting based on the last 3-year average. Sorry, I should explain the whole spreadsheet. I jumped in too far, too fast. 6 million comes from base. The other 3.9 comes from usage. You can see tier 2 is where most of that money is generated because everybody's in that tier.
And you've shown us similar sheets before.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Great. So, scenario 2 is the one that, for lack of a better term, would involve the most risk, because the least in the base, and this has the 17.5, so we go from thinking, okay, we'll make 483,000 here on that tier, versus under scenario 1, we're only counting on 432. So we're putting $50,000 more potential revenue in that last tier. It's probably a good way to look at it.
Which actually doesn't sound like a lot.
It doesn't. Yeah, I mean, these don't move a whole lot, but it can.
I'm surprised. I thought it was going to be bigger.
Yeah. Because as you see, the trick is there's not very many gallons. Whereas here you're talking hundreds of millions. Here you're talking single-digit millions.
Yep.
This one is the hybrid where you still increase the base, only 3%. You do tier it a little bit, but you're a little less reliant on making sure you get into these tiers. Any of them work, but I'm not saying one, we should choose one or the other. All of them have their arguments. You could argue if we don't do at least a 3% rate increase to the base, that's inflation. So we're saying we were undercharging before
agreed.
So there's an argument for that. To Corey's point last month, you know, we went from 2506 to 34, a 36% increase. And then, you know, would go up again. If we did the scenario 2, then they're looking, if you were in this, and granted, these are people who conservation doesn't seem to be a big concern for them. You know, they went from 3780 to 55 to now we'd be 64 something for that high tier. So it has its merits. It would push conservation, but if we push it too hard, then do we not generate growth? Those businesses. So,
and I'll I'll just say I'm in agreement with that. If that comes across as pushing too hard, you know.
I feel like if we learned anything from this summer, it's that we need to have more of a conservation focus for 2026. I'm concerned that what we had last summer was kind of unsustainable.
Because they're not even stopping. Is that what you're saying?
Bordering on wasteful.
Yeah. Our rate obviously isn't changing their habits. They're still
watering. Right. So you'd advocate here and then for the 17%.
I definitely would not want to keep the, you know, it's definitely either the hybrid or the tier.
Okay.
I think I asked this last month, but maybe not when I'm about to. How many people in like the top tiers did we have? Do we track that year over year? Yeah. So like, and where's your cutoff? Is it the top three tiers, the top five tiers?
I measure what everybody drops off. So we basically start with, let's say, 5,000 customers. Mm-hmm. 2,000 stop in the first tier. Mm-hmm. Another 1,000 drop in the next tier, and 1,000. By the time you get to the last tier, you're talking 50 people.
Yeah, right? I think the high water on that was 65.
Yeah, maybe 65, 62, something like that. So even though
do we have any evidence that what we did last year caused a number of people to drop out of that?
It was interesting. What we had, as I looked at, as the customers came in and we finished the billing each month, in June, the people who got really high bills, some dropped out. New people replaced them in July. It wasn't always, some of the people always stay in that tier.
Sure.
But you were some, you'd impact some. Then others would step in, and then maybe they come down, but others would step in depending on.
Maybe they're on the edge, but.
Yeah. So it's not always the exact same 52 customers.
But right. Year on year, are those highest tiers increasing or decreasing?
They've increased the last 2 years. Okay. The last time when we really influenced behavior was the drought. And that highest
with
tier
conservation rates.
And the highest tier was $75.
There was lots of messaging.
Right.
I mean, we can't. That's a factor. What extent it plays in people's behavior, I can't tell.
I just wonder.
It is a factor.
Yeah,
we saw it in our data. Yeah,
I think it really does. And obviously the weather. Okay, but we went into the severe drought, and then we got really really wet next summer. So we had. I don't even know how many. We had very few people. Once, I think, because of the drought messaging and the restriction. And then the following year, because we had a very cool spring and a more wet summer.
Yep.
You start to get into these warmer years. I would probably consider last year more of a typical pattern where we had a normal start to our June. This year, we had an extremely dry, hot June that just kicked off the irrigation season fast and hard. And then we just carry that line for the entire summer. It hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
Where we don't, that's not a normal pattern. Whether that's the new normal, I don't know. But that's not a typical pattern. Trying to budget for that, not sure we're there yet, right? But can we do more to educate our customers so that they're not watering every day? 100% yes. And I think that's got to be a huge push for us this winter, is watering every other day is wasteful and you will be fine.
But it's going to require us to change our rules and regulations so we can enforce things.
Like and hire enforcement.
Which is, yeah.
We can do a lot of enforcement through the system because we can download and know who's watering every day. So we don't have to drive around and catch them. We can say your data is showing us you're driving, you're watering every day, and go and personally and contact them. We don't have to catch them doing it.
Okay. But there are, this is another aspect, you can't water on the adjacent properties and down the street. It's mainly just the times and amount.
Yeah.
And I would say for the majority of our customers are doing the right thing. Yep. It's just these, 60 and hundreds that are falling into these really high tiers that are, we're charging them that much because they're driving the peak. Right. They're driving us to create these capital projects so they can.
And Anna and her team are really good about notifying people about leaks.
Yeah, we're trying to capture our water loss and making sure that we're, you know, notified. But, you know, do we start becoming more proactive with if we start to see, if we look at it weekly, and if we see you're watering every day and we can tell when you're irrigating, messages go out to those customers and this is a warning. You know, do we just start trying to have more conversations with folks? I think.
Yeah. Because a lot of people, like in promptory, I guarantee a lot of people don't even know.
I know.
That is true.
Yeah. You know, my neighbor was watering his yard every single day and he was not there for the entire month. You know, it just, yeah.
No, we need to educate landscapers too.
Yeah.
HOAs, landscapers, like maybe try to get out more. I know Anna and her team did a nice education with the backflow folks, and we partnered with Park City Municipal and who else was there? Was it Park City?
Summit Water,
and tried to talk to backflow people to help get them on, you know, the SWIFT comply and just get to some more relationship building. I think we could probably do that with landscapers and property management.
We'll have space to do it.
Well,
I know you just said that we can catch them if they've got a leak and make sure that it gets addressed. If they do have a leak like that, that's running up their bill, are they on the hook for paying to that?
They're on the hook not to pay the leak. You know, they have to pay for some water, but right.
Well, it depends on it's a very specific type of leak that can get adjusted. They can't, because their timers were going off or they didn't know, won't give them a leak.
Right.
But if it's a true leak and they have documentation that they have fixed it, they're on Ion Water. We have a laundry list of things we make them go through, then yes, they could get some adjustments.
Yeah, I just hate to see somebody end up in that top tier because of the...
Oh, yeah, and I don't think, like, with Ion Water, that shouldn't happen much anymore, right?
No, people should be able to water. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are absent. Homeowners.
Yeah. Typically, the people in that top tier don't have leaks.
Yes.
When you adjust your bill from $30,000 a month to $20,000 a month.
We're just playing a little bit. Kind of hearing what we're hearing, I was just throwing a little scenario out that's between hybrid and tier.
Okay.
So.
I love that Steve loves this model building.
Real time.
I do.
Real time.
Steve controls E until it looks right.
That's where I went.
Every week's a great week for me.
So that gets us pretty close. If we look, I mean, without changing commercial and standby, we'd follow a similar pattern. We're 9.95, 9.94, 9.95, this one, you know, 9.96, so, you know, $10,000. Where this is tiered, not quite as aggressively as two, but more than the hybrid. So we could decide to present something like that next month at our rates hearing. But like I said,
real quick,
what?
Sorry, could you shift back to two real fast?
Yeah.
So there's a big step to the final two. Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of like just that more smooth approach.
The one
in the model you just made.
The one we're doing live?
Yeah, and then just jumping 2.5 at a time. So for tiers. But that's just me. I'm one person.
Yeah.
I do. I like it. I agree.
Would you like me to work with this a little bit and just tighten up the numbers on commercial and something like that? Some that are between the hybrid and the tiered?
I'll give you more permission to have fun with the model. Yes.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Because what we'll do, the one thing with commercial is they have one less tier. So you can't just mirror them exactly. You have to play with it a little bit.
And commercial encompasses what, schools, businesses, everyone?
Triumph, restaurants.
Wouldn't it be great if they could get rid of their 5,000 acres of grass?
Yes, I just have to replace the revenue somehow. No, which is always the more
balancing act.
It is a balancing act, because the more we push conservation, unfortunately, that means people who have been good will pay a little too, because it doesn't. We're still going to have to generate the money. Does that make sense?
But maybe that's
well, it our, does, yeah. But you know, it also means we can serve more customers if,
yeah.
if
yeah.
we grow without having an importation project.
But right? kind of a built-in contingency.
Yeah,
we're not really showing anything. We're not carrying officially, but you know it's there. So, like, if you had a whole bunch of customers come out at some point, and you didn't have enough water, you could go talk to Triumph and incentivize them to deliver to the farm.
Yeah, like that's what I tell you. What? Yeah, it's $150 per 1,000 gallons now. If you're above 100,000 gallons, we drive a lot of people out, and then we could serve a lot more.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. See, Chris is even having fun with the model. You just copied it down, kind of moved around.
Yeah, moved around a little bit.
See, and now we're right there because 12.945 is the same as scenario 2. And all of these are basically, in my mind, the same. Mm-hmm. The margin of error kind of thing. So how does that look to everybody?
Yes, Corey, you're the one person sitting over there quietly contemplating it. So.
This is still 6325,
son. Yeah, I tend to waffle between the hybrid plan and the tiered plan, and if we want to entertain the waffling by making a new one, I'm on board.
Okay.
Tiered hybrid?
Yeah.
We can only waffle
the tiered hybrid.
You know, to your point, if it doesn't matter to the customers, it shouldn't matter to us. Just charge them. You know? And when it does start mattering, then well, maybe we
visited
at that point.
Oh, what's your
butt? Yeah, I thought you were taking
it. I'm telling you, that's bad.
I've obviously never used this before. It's the first time.
Okay.
That's fun.
Gut, that looks pretty good to me. What, Lisa, opinion? Okay. So a little riskier, but I think we've proven that people's behavior, it would be something where we're probably reacting more, like drought. And then if we get a really bad winter and there's drought restrictions, then this whole model's thrown out the board.
If we get more drought messaging, if we have a light winter, which they're on the fence about what's going to happen precipitation-wise, and there's more conservation messaging, and there's more messaging about the Great Salt Lake, and we start educating our customers, you're going to, I predict, I could be wrong, maybe people don't care, and you could water as much as you want, depending on how rich you are, and that's another topic for another day, maybe, I don't know. But you're going to lose people out of those top tiers, so you're going to lose revenue out of those, you know, the 200, the half a million, what do you got sitting in there?
Right, but to be clear, you're going to move them out of that category, but they're still going to exist in the next tier down.
Yeah.
But that money, they don't ever create that money, though, again.
Sure.
And even though it doesn't seem like kind of the conversation earlier, that's $400,000, $450,000 that are coming, that basically is coming from 60 feet.
Yeah.
So when you divide that up, that's each of them, what, 30 or 40 grand, because they pay summer water bills of 15 to 20 grand.
Yep.
So.
But we haven't seen a trend of those numbers dropping off.
Not
because of weather, but they did when we had drought restrictions.
Drought restrictions and the higher rates than we're proposing is the only thing that drove them out.
And if we have a drought and we increase all our messaging again, these won't be our rates. We'll be
correct
observation rates.
Yeah. The only way this really gets blown up is if somehow we have a super rainy July or August. The thunderstorms. Or a super late.
Yeah. So you.
We don't build too much into June, but yeah, or a super late start. But I don't know about you guys, but it feels like thunderstorm season or rainy season around here switched from August to October the last few years. Like we seem to be getting that rain coming later in the year, right before.
It was the wettest October on record, wasn't
it?
Yeah. In fact, I think it's already like the fifth wettest month on record.
And I want to say last year was kind of that same too. We had a little bit in August, but kind of it hit right before the snow. And everybody's like, oh, it's great. It's hitting right before the snow, so the ground's saturated. So who knows? But next year it could
move that forward next year for us.
Okay, I'll see what I can do. I'll make a few calls. All right. Okay. Kind of worked this scenario?
Yes. So are you just going to present one scenario then for the public hearing?
I think for the public hearing, I think we're going to just talk about these are the rates.
Because we're going to have to put that in a packet way before the board meeting. So we kind of have to come to a consensus unless we're going to do it on the fly.
Yeah, no, that was my question. So if we're good with just moving forward with this scenario, then that's what Steve will prepare as, you know, as the public hearing document, little presentation that we'll go through. You, of course, can still make adjustments, but that's what we present at the public hearing.
And we'll be responsive to it.
I'll prepare this.
Save that.
Okay.
Yep. Just click save. All right. Let's jump into the budget. I think budget.
Well, there were a couple other items on the memo that we wanted to put on the rate sheet for the public hearing. Which I told Steve he could take a break and I walked through them really quick. The first one being a dollar charge per paper bill delivered. Like it mentioned, we do have quite a few electronic, but we are still delivering almost $3,500 paper bills each month, which equates to about $33,000 a year in postage and handling. And that's just in the third party, not internal staff time to manage all that. So we are proposing doing a pretty heavy education campaign to get customers to switch to electronic bills, to an e-bill format. And then if by July, maybe, you know, start instituting that $1 bill surcharge, if that's something the board is interested in.
So they would need to opt in. We're going to opt them. We're going to go electronic, but if they want to go the other way, they have to opt in.
Do you have an email address for every customer? I guess, can you migrate everybody over without question?
You can let me see them. We try to collect almost
every vast majority. We use them for Everbridge. We use it for Badger Meter stuff. So we try and get up there all the time.
And we kind of badger the title companies if they don't look at it. It's like, I know you have one.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. We're going to get a title, right?
Not a closing.
Yeah.
We try to badger them.
Sorry, a little clarification just on my part. Were we saying we're moving everybody and then they have to tell us they want to go back to paper, or we're just trying to get them to decide to go to electric? But if they still want, they haven't opted into electric, we're still sending them a paper bill and charging them a dollar in July?
That's how I understood it.
That's how I understood it, but I thought I heard something different.
Yeah, I thought we had discussed we were going to move everybody, but then you'd have to opt in, because when you opt in, you're accepting that you are paying that $1.
Okay, so everybody's moving over.
Everybody moves to electronic, and then they have to tell us why don't I get a paper bill anymore? We have to pay a dollar. Okay.
Isn't that what you just said?
No, Steve and I were thinking it was the other way, that we're going to educate people to get an email account, because they have to move to Express Bill Pay. So it's creating Express Bill Pay. Can we even do that?
I talked to them today. We can.
So we can just give them an email account and they can set up a customer account with an email account, but without the customer's consent?
She said that we could opt to go where everything on there is electronic. Everyone says paperless.
You'd have to add you'd have to have 3,500 customers on there and create 3,500. Right?
Is that how many paper customers you still have?
Most of them have an email.
There might be a little fine tuning.
I've had this happen on other bills, like personally, where I just got notification that everybody's moving over. So this didn't strike me as crazy at all.
I think you'll have a better success.
9 months to say, starting July 1st, you're going to pay a dollar bill if you keep the mission, switch it over.
And the dollars are just covering the cost.
Yeah, I'll have to pay some out.
Well, we can have further discussion about how we want to do it. This is just getting it on the rate sheet so that we have the ability to chart it.
Yeah.
Okay, I love it. So we'll put that on there. The other one we talked about in the last couple meetings is the new division of drinking water fee. That's 0.0331 per thousand. So we would just like to show that as a separate line. We need to put that on our fee sheet. Next one. Theft of service fee increased from $1,000 to $1,500. Our theft service has been at $1,000 for over 10 years. We feel like this should be moved up to $1,500, just A, to keep pace with the cost of water, and B, we want to make it pretty punitive so that people aren't.
So we have much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really, through the through like the temporary meters off the hydrants? Mm-hmm. Or
a couple of horse needs to go somebody brought on.
We have.
For jumping residential law.
Is $1,500 like, is that punitive enough?
So that was going to be mine. Right. I was asking why it wasn't $10,000.
Right.
Maybe
that's a bit much. But like,
these aren't residents, right? These are, or are they?
We charge the residents.
If this is contractors, make it so it affects them. $1,500, but they got away with it for a month and they're ahead on their schedule. That's like in their budget. Like they're loving it. They won $1,500. That's not punitive.
$5,000.
I'll negotiate to $5,000. I like 10.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, how much does it harm us? And how often does it happen? And is it malicious or is it ignorance?
Some of it's
malicious. The one I'm thinking of.
I get the homeowners that their contractor told them it's industry standard. I'm like, yes, it is. But they're still going to get caught.
I'm fine with $2,500. I can be talked up for whatever Ian decides to talk me up to.
I like round numbers, so I'll back down to five. Andy seemed comfortable with that.
It has to be at least something reasonable.
So $100,000 would be out.
Well, they're not reasonable anymore.
Yeah. So maybe $5,000. I also don't want it to be, if the number goes too high, I can acknowledge that then it would be really hard for non-regional staff to deal with that. Have somebody that's going to be upset. We want them to be upset, but not to where they're like,
well,
pretty dang
on. So there's a couple different scenarios here. If it's a contractor that's doing side work, we don't have an opportunity to tack it on a bill. If it's a construction, we just bill the account. So, you know, one way we can collect it.
Do you feel like one's more egregious than the other? Like if it's a resident versus a contractor?
They both are. To me, it seems like there are probably some ignorance cases out there. The majority of these are people blatantly breaking the law, stealing water. And water is, in my opinion, I've said this before, I think it's undervalued overall. So if someone's stealing it, I think. Yeah, it should be more punitive than $1,500.
8.5 sounds good.
Yeah, 20. I have a hard time getting over 25.
We also have to be the water.
Right.
Employees, so we have to deal with it. But it's a water collector contractor. Just know these people a lot of time.
I can appreciate that point. Yeah, you're the base out there. So
okay, confiscate is something.
$2,500. If that's the name you're going to throw out there as the thief, then I'm going with $5,000.
Shoot it down.
No,
but you may throw money in.
If you're telling me that the project manager at Promontory is your case study,
pathetically.
Well, not pathetically.
Hypothetically.
$3,750.
Maybe per incident.
I'm trying to think of how many gallons that is.
It's been 1,000 for 10 years. I guess it's
500 before that.
It probably doesn't look good if it jumps all the way to.
Yeah, I'm good with 2,500. I'm not happy with 1,500.
I'll say that. 25. Karen?
All in favor?
And this will be part of the.
It'll be on the rate sheet, and then you kind of approve the rate sheet.
And at the public hearing next month.
Okay, $2,500 then. And then the last one was a disconnection of service fee. We previously had this on a rate sheet. I think it was inadvertently removed because we still talk about this disconnection of service fee and removal of meter fee in our rules and regs. So this is just to add it back on.
It's an error.
It is just an error, just a correction.
Cool.
Okay. Perfect. All right. That's all. On the roof. Back to Steve.
But the other caveat is we are also going to be coming back to you in the first quarter of next year with some other fees that we would like to adjust, but it will require some updates to our rules and regs or additions to our rules and regs. So we've acknowledged them now, but we just don't have the time to make all of those changes to get it in for this year's budget.
Okay. I'm doing my math right. The $2,500 is about 140,000 gallons of water. So they've got I think 25. Is that what we said?
25.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's 140,000 gallons of water.
So they'd have to be using a lot of water to risk paying that, let's say. Right?
Okay. Oh, sorry. I wasn't following you at first, but I'm picking it up now.
Okay.
So,
assassin.
Yeah. You know, if they want to.
If they want to play
completely play this game, they've got to use more than that or they're going to get slapped.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that's all they pay. They don't pay for the water they use. They just pay the...
We have no idea.
Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, as you recall, earlier this year, Sam and his team at Bowen Collins read the IFFP because we had updated costs. We wanted to roll those through the impact fee analysis because we felt like we're probably undercharging a little bit given the new costs. So Bowen and Collins handed it off to Zions Public Finance. Zions Public Finance, and we all worked together. Basically, what's happened is it's resulted in a 15 to 19% increase per impact fee, depending on location, whether it's promontory, and there's some other factors that play in, but that's kind of where the rate increase ended. So the next page, to make this as simple as simple, or I was going to say as it can be, it probably could have been. So the general service area in 2025, if your peak day was 1 gallon per minute, that would have been your impact fee, the $18,000. Most people aren't that, so they weren't paying that, but that's kind of the standard that was set. And promontory was $5,409. The new one would be $20,809.64, $56.41. So increase of $2,700 on the general service area, $1,000 if you're in promontory. Now, most impact fees, let's say, are half of that, maybe a little less than half of that top line because they're not really a 1 GPM per minute peak day. But it still is a sizable increase, which made the process worth it, because we'll be able to collect that much on all of them. And it costs us minimal. Bowen and Collins is really reasonable. They just had to do an amendment. Line of Public Finance, their charge is going to be really minimal. So we're going to be under 10 grand to make this change to pick up, you know, a grant, $1,500 more on each impact fee that's paid. So it was a good process to go through. And it was just that the actual costs that were getting estimated were a lot higher than what we had in the IFP. Everybody, this will be part of the hearing next month too, to just present it. So 15 to 19%, because basically a lot of our costs went up 15 to 19%. So nothing changed other than costs. You good?
I think this is from this session.
Okay.
Chapter 3, Table 9. It seems like we're short on 146 acre feet. I just wasn't sure.
149 acre feet.
This was in Chapter 3, Table 9.
Table 9.
The analysis.
The analysis is there, Chris, if you want to pull it up really quick. We didn't open it up. But let's take a quick look, just make sure I'm getting the right note. Because, like it says, it's just a draft. So I'm hoping finance will prepare the final one behind you.
Yeah.
And then there was a Silver Creek Reservoir. I don't know where that is.
I think they're talking about the 2 million gallon tank out by the well. It's so big, we've called it a reservoir on occasion.
Both are commonly used tanks.
So that's the tank over
By the Silver Creek Department.
Okay.
Fire Department.
Okay.
So where what page were we on?
Chapter 3, table 9.
There might be easiest to find it by the table 9. About that.
Yeah, so it seems like based on that, we're short. Is that right, or is that just our water rights?
Water rights exist in the past.
We've got an annual demand of 3569 and use of existing facilities of 3423. So we're like...
I'll look into that. This might be a... This is kind of coming from the IFFP a little bit too, so we may have to backtrack into it. Because what they're saying is, in the end of the 10-year window, 3,300 acre feet, so we can include those costs in the fee. At build out, it's 3,569. Use of existing facilities percentage. I'll have to.
Yeah, I was just curious. It looked like we were short, and I wasn't sure that was if I was just not reading it right.
We're not short water rights. We have plenty of water rights. It's probably making sure we've got the right amount and the right windows. Sam, I made a note. We'll talk.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you for reading through that.
A little warm up for the budget.
We've simplified the budget so much. Okay. And now the reason we're all, now that it's 8 o'clock, let's start talking about why we're all here tonight. Budget. Let's just go to the presentation. Hopefully you've had a chance to kind of look at this. I'll hit the highlights as best we can. We'll go over production usage, growth, revenue, and expenses, then our debt ratio, cash position, and capital projects. And we're at the end because Chris really wanted to speed this process up. Okay, so let's go ahead and go to the next page. Pretty pictured. All new pictures. Well, it's kind of new pictures. From the pie graph, you'll notice, if you remember from last year, there's no Summit Water anymore. So this year, by the end of the year, I'm showing that we'll have sold about 5,388 acre feet. Next year, it's 4,857. The reason for the drop is 500 acre feet of that is that we're not doing anything to Summit Water. Okay, let's go ahead and go to the next one. This is kind of an intro. This is what I was alluding to earlier. I'm going to stand up. So it's just a one. So we had a climb here. I actually looked at the year before, and I don't think this was a climb. And then every year, it's like we drop, up, drop, drop, drop. During, you know, drought restrictions, wet spring, kind of coming off a high. So this is the first time we've had two increases in a row per culinary connection. The last column relates is 0.44 acre feet. But as you can see, when we were building the budget for 2025, we were averaging these 2 years. And so when we not only didn't do that, but went above what we thought was a high year, that's what's really driven the revenue. And Sam, this is just Bill. We can match up numbers at the end of the year like we normally do. But definitely seen an increase in usage over the last 2 years. Okay, let's go to the next one. So in the bar graph, this is that pie, but in bar graph and over time. So if you look at the bottom section, that's MRW retail customers. So if you see the last bar and you kind of look at how big that is, it's the average of the last 3 years, because that's how we felt would be the best, where we could kind of count on it, but not be too conservative, but not too aggressive. Because 23 was low, 24 was higher, and 25 was yet higher. We missed the little light blue sections gone because there's no water going to Summit Water. Park City.
Can we bring that back?
In 2029, we'll bring some of that back. Park City, we're thinking is going to take just a little bit more. That's not a big revenue driver because it's kind of a cost-sharing thing. But since they're picking up some of the slack from us, the Summit Water, they will probably run a little bit through more through Quinn's, but they can actually meet demand through Quinn's. But we still think they'll probably use a little more through Quinn's. And then the top is Promontory. As you can see, Promontory has grown just because of the third golf course in the hot summers. So we're kind of predicting that same, again, three-year average on what they've – now that the short course has been in place, we have a better predictor on how much raw water we're going to take. All right. New water connections. Sorry, that can – again, a huge spike in 2021. 2024, we were down to 90. We're above 90 right now. Predicting by the end of the year, we'll get to 108. We've had a little bit of October than I thought, so we might break 100. So for next year, just for budgeting purposes, I'm using 100, kind of the average of the last 2 years, kind of the trend we're seeing. The next one is the revenue that's generated. So again, spike 21. This year, we're getting closer to that 700,000. Again, with October being a little better than I thought, we'll probably break that. I budgeted 700,000 for 2026 off fewer connections because the impact fee is going up a little bit. So we'll be able to make the same amount of money off a few fewer connections.
When did, just Stephen, I'm thinking on the last slide still, when did interest rates jump? Like, was all of 2024 near where current interest rates are?
Yes.
Yes, it was bad. It was a bad move. Well,
so a bit more. Potentially, there's an upside, and that number will jump even higher. Rate shift, but that's totally safe. 100. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it's kind of safe. It's a comfortable budget number given recent trends. Rates could drop, but financial stability could be in question, or economy as a whole could be in question. So you never know. Okay. All right. No, good question, though. So then we get to revenue. And the big, so this is where we had budgeted 2025. We've got some amendments down here to reallocate to move some funds around because we've got to cover some additional costs that I'll show you later. But the line I want you to really look at is the projected. That this number is about $2 million higher because water revenue ended up being so high this year. The other one, interest earnings. We knew we'd have a good year, but it's turned into even a little better year because interest rates didn't come down like we thought. And so even though we were spending that construction cash, we were still making quite a bit on interest. Impact fees, you know, going to be $100,000 over. This other non-operating special revenue, we budgeted our normal amount plus the $1,050,000 we're going to make off selling the building after we net against what it is on our books. What the difference is that direct pay reimbursement. So we ended up with quite a big variance where we thought we would only do 18 and we're going to do 20.6 million this year.
We've got the proposed amendments and then the proposed amended, but then we've also got the 2025 projected. And I'm just trying to understand the difference between the proposed amended and the projected.
We only amend to kind of make up a shortfall. We don't amend to what actually happens.
Okay, so the amend, yeah, and it doesn't make up for the fact that we had so much more.
Yeah, you don't amend to say, hey, we made $2 million more. You just say, hey, we ended up a little short here, so we're covering it from here, kind of thing.
Okay.
So for next year, you'll see this is so what we're predicting. So quite a bit higher than what we budgeted, 1.7 million, but not that, but actually a little lower than what we made in 2025. So this number is the combination of growth and the rate increase and usage being the average of 3 years. And that's how we get
that. But two of the 3 years are kind of high years.
Kind of right? High years. So this is a aggressive, but it's still less than what we're going to finish this year at, even with growth and even with a 5% rate increase, because we're not thinking usage could be, will be as high as 25. We're predicting it's the average of 3 years. We lose Weber Basin. That 500-acre fee did generate $887,000 this year. So we lose that, but net we're going to end up making a little bit more when we compare budget. We're not going to make as much as this unless we have another really hot, dry year. Then you look down here, and we kind of come back to normal. Our interest earnings, now we've spent most of that cash, so that won't be as high. Our impact fees are going to be up a little bit, or we're predicting about the same. Our assessments, we no longer book the Promontory assessments there. So this is state, this is just community water and
stagecoach.
Thank you. And this is just all the other little miscellaneous stuff like inspection fees and things like that. So that's our revenue budget for next year. It's lower than what we budgeted last year. But that's because in 2025, we had a lot of those one-off things, selling the building, getting the direct pay reimbursements, things like that. All right. Expense side, or next slide, maybe.
Are you good with that water sales number?
I'm a little, I feel like it's a little aggressive.
Okay.
I acknowledge how we came up with it. I'm just saying, like, you know, that's going to be really hard to hit unless it's another dry, wet summer. I don't know. I mean, I
go both ways on it. Like, I have that thought definitely. And then as Steve was speaking, I was reminding myself that I don't think we've ever come under.
Not since you've been here. The last time we were under budget was 2019, wasn't it?
Weren't we on the really wet year after the drought restrictions? Weren't we under? I want to say we had.
Maybe on water sales we were under. But we had some
total budget. If it's really, really wet, I mean, at least in the, you know, the most recent past, if it's really, really wet, you can swing $1 million.
Yeah.
If it's really, really hot, you can swing $1 million the other way.
Yeah.
So,
I'm going to jump ahead for just a quick,
okay.
There's one that's called debt ratio, Chris, that's down a few slides. Maybe this one. One up, sorry.
Third.
Yeah, that one. So we always budget this number in the ones between a 1.5 is pretty good, 1.75. We keep coming in quite high on it, which means we're being over on revenue and under on expenses. This tightens it up a little, 1.6, but let's say we don't hit the 450. We only hit 1,400. This only drops to probably about 1.5, which still keeps us within bond covenant ratios. So yes, we would have to amend our budget, but we don't get in any trouble. We just generate a little less cash for capital projects the next year.
1.5 is the lowest we can go?
1.25 is the lowest we can go.
What would 1.25?
Yeah. So we always need to, this is a function of always wanting to make sure we generate money for capital projects. Is if we budgeted this at 1.25, basically we won't have any money for capital projects.
So I think Ian's question is the difference between 1.6 and 1.25, what is the dollar amount for 0.25?
We'd have to miss.
I just did the math. Going from 1.6 to 1.5 was 400,000, you said?
Basically.
So we're covered with the 1 million swing.
Yeah, so we would still be covered with a million, but what would really happen is. It's not on the slide.
And don't we have a rate stabilization fund?
Yeah, we've got rate stabilization. We've got drought reserves we can tap into and things like that. What it would really do, why is that? Maybe it's on the next one. Oh, right, it's there, just down below.
I'm sorry.
So right now, this spins off for capital projects in the next year. If we don't hit that, what it means is we just maybe have to modify our capital budget a little bit. Or whatever, but we're rolling a lot over this year. But that's the first spot we feel it is. We adjust our capital budget if we need to. But the 1.25 really isn't a concern, let's say, because we always budget to try to generate enough to keep up on capital projects. All right, now let's.
And the 14.4 million, that's a 3-year average, you said?
It's a 3-year usage average. But then it's factored in by growth and then the rate increase is how we get there. Okay. Okay, let's go to the expense slide.
Are you comfortable now?
I'm more comfortable with it. I guess the other thing that, you know, just kind of kept me up a little bit when I was thinking about it. So we've got, do we have any ability to acknowledge that 19% of our water is going to irrigation and it's only generating you know, it's not generating anywhere near its actual. And I realize it's one point. You know, there's a lot of, you know, it's untreated and it's, you know, going to one place and things like that. But I'm just wondering if we're being careful with our analysis of what that cost is, you know, to go to promontory as well.
Every year we have to do that. And basically it takes the cost of the lease fees, the cost of the power to get it up from Lost Canyon to basically the pond, because it comes off of the pond. In part of their agreement, they get credit. So, like, we're going to charge them for all the lease fees.
Yeah.
Because they paid for it. But a lot of their customers have paid for those in their water bills. So they get that subtracted. I bill them for the difference. So it is reviewed every year, like how much their rate went up. Like, I think it went up pretty significantly this year. I think we were like $1.81 maybe per thousand of that raw water, and it's over $2 this year. So, you know, a pretty, so we do watch that carefully. It doesn't, back, I didn't do this year, but previously we've done that. Like, large residential customers use 20% of the water. How much of the revenue do they generate? 20%. We were pretty close. Like, everybody, basically what they use is the revenue they generate. The raw water doesn't generate, because it's not the same beast on how we handle them, and because of contracts with Promontory and stuff like that.
But that is something that we're paying attention to, because Promontory wants to continue to ship off of the culinary system for their irrigation onto the raw water.
Right.
So that will have an impact. But we are aware of that. We're looking at it. Make sure we cover that.
Do we have to do that?
I mean, they're entitled to that raw water in their allocation. Yeah, it's...
No, not the current, but the future.
Yeah, I don't know if we have to. I mean, it's their water, how they use
it. I thought there was some sort of agreement that because they brought so many shares to the table initially, that was tied into that original agreement or something.
So they're capped at the number of acre feet, whether it's treated or raw. I don't think there's a specific definition of what has to be worked for it.
All right. We okay? I think I'm okay. Now when Karen, I have to admit, when you say something, it makes me pause for a minute. It does. Yeah,
I think we should really, really think about the revenue number, just knowing the past 2 years were really high.
Like, if you went back, like if you did a 4-year average or a 5-year
average,
does it drop at all? Or do we go back into those?
And we're kind of ready.
You'll hit the 2023 year.
And the drought restriction year is a hard year to average in. Because it's not a
year. A 4-year year is a not unreasonable.
Yeah. We could come here. Well, right now we're taking these three.
Yeah.
The fourth year was drought. And this year was very heavily influenced by the high snowpack and the late melt. Yeah, so this was, as much as this might, I wouldn't say artificially, because they're not artificially, this number is real and it's by the hot, dry summer. This number is that low because of the conditions that existed that were pretty unique that year too. Whereas you average these and you're pretty close to this, and this is more of a typical year, and that's what we're using. Because if we weren't using a typical year, that 14.45 would be 15 million something, because it's already lower than what we're going to make this year, and we're talking about growth and a rate increase. Oh, I hope I'm right. But Mother Nature can mess with all of this real fast.
Yeah. But if you did drop that number 13 or something, then
then you wouldn't have the rate increase.
We could reduce our rate increase.
And our ratio would still stay
down. It would still be about.
It'd be tight, but it'd be okay.
I'd rather not be tight on that.
Yeah, so I think what we're saying is the way to bring this number down is to either not have the rate increase or average in more low years. And I don't really want to do that, because if I do that, I think we have a possibility of really blowing past our budget again. And I've been accused of sandbagging. I don't want to sandbag anymore.
I'm in the middle of this, but I'm trying to side more towards, seems like you've usually been really dang close, if not under, so.
And I feel like we certainly need a certain progression in the rate increases in order to hopefully we don't have a...
The sidebar on that, the side note on that is, if WIFIA, let's say even if it's a 20% chance we have to go to market, we need this rate increase this year to help temper future rate increases. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You sold me with that one.
Okay. Okay.
Serve my comment up with you, but I do have a backup plan.
Expenses. Cut down. Talked about these. I think we've decided.
Throw that slide out.
This was just a holder until we made a decision. And I think our decision is between these two.
Yes.
In that not we're choosing between these two, but it's actually between those two.
Need a new name, though.
2.5. Okay.
2.5. Nice. Some nice expense pictures. Okay. This year, we budgeted 12.868. We're going to come in about 300,000 down. Next year, we're budgeting 13.7, about an 817,000 increase over budget. If you back out depreciation, that's significantly lower. And I think that says it on the bottom of the slide. Depreciation is jumping a lot because we have just bought $20 million worth of assets in our building. So that's why depreciation is jumping. You back out depreciation and it's more like 2.5%, which feels kind of tight if you're looking at budget to budget. But when we look at what we really did to budget, it's more like we're giving 2.5% over already a 3% saving. So it's almost like a 6% increase over actual. It's a 2.5 over budget, but a 6% increase over actual. Make sense? Okay. This issuance that we're talking about here, this adjustment, the reason we're taking some of that revenue, extra revenue, this would be the combined bond closing costs of WIFIA, attorneys, WIFIA, all that kind of stuff. So if we can get that closed this year, I need to say we're going to spend that money. So that's why that amendment. Interest expense goes down again. We continue to pay principal down on all those debts. And let's see. Operations, kind of the typical stuff. We are at this point recommending a 3% COLA and a 3% merit is included in this budget. All right. Moving on. We went here. I want to just go down a little bit, Chris, because this is the important number. This 4.4 million, as you see, we had originally budgeted where we'd put the $1 million back in regionalization reserve that we took to start funding the project. We're putting that back in, and we still have $4.47 million, which is really nice when we get to the capital budget, because this is making some of the things we wanted to do possible to speed up. Okay, that's kind of the key number there. Cash, we're in good position. This number excludes cash held for debt payments, so the stuff we have to put in the escrow every month to make our debt payments, and the construction cash. So this is kind of our cash we have more access to. And used to be low, district's done well, collected a lot of impact fees, did some capital projects. End of summer, it's high, we'll spend it down again. But we kind of reset our plateau or our normal variation higher than it used to be, which gives us more stability. Okay. Capital projects. Building, treatment plant. This was Browns Canyon water line. This was a Matterhorn project picture. And this one is one of those electrical upgrades. But
so
I couldn't.
That's your chlorine. Yeah, so that's
24/7.
Yeah.
Two summer park photos.
We're still
Okay. Capital budget. So this was our budget to start the year. There are a few amendments. Basically, we're going to take that $1 million we're saving, put it back up into the budget, but I'm requesting we take it back out for capital projects. This is the big number, the 38.9 million. Basically, it's the Lithia loan that will add to the capital budget. So those are hopefully amendments. Hopefully, we can still close that Lithia loan in 2025.
I was surprised the 224 interconnect wasn't already in the 2025 budget.
We don't have to pay it until 2026. So we were aware of it and knew it was coming, but we didn't have to put it in the capital budget because we knew we didn't have to make a payment. So this is sources, uses. So what I wanted, I'll stand on this side for a minute.
So in addition to the Withia loan, we're going to put some more of our own money in. As you may recall, we got to do 20%. The loan can be 80%.
So we're putting some of our more own money here. Let's go down a little bit. This is where some of these have been able to, the community water tank replacement was already planned for this year. The well, we're being able to accelerate because of the money we've made this year. We're going to get that back in generating water for us. This is the 224 interconnect that can be paid with impact fees, the big project that you all drive past all the time. So the one thing we're going to do is spend about $4.45 million of impact fees. We're sitting on about 5.4. We're going to aggressively use our impact fees next year to help fund some of these projects. But also, the reason they're all possible is also because of the cash we generated last year. So we're asking an ask of $10.24 million. Most of it down here, basically we're spending a lot of, scroll up, but just a little bit. That this number should kind of look familiar. That's what this year's going to generate. This is impact fees. These are capital reserves. This is putting that other $1 million back in. That's how we come up with all the money. And then this is how we spend. And then I think, let's keep going. They can stop me if they want.
It's not a rule, so I'm fucking up.
The old revenue budget for this year was $18,036,000, blah, blah, blah. We're increasing our, amending our budget, our revenue budget to show $265,000 extra because we need to increase our expense line by $265,000 to pay for the bond closing. Our net position change remains the same. Our capital budget, the old was 3.7. That's all we asked for last year. We were so nice. We're amending it to $42 million because there was the loan. We got to put that in there. The debt service hasn't changed, remained the same. Our budget for 2026, next slide. Revenue, lower than last year. Expenses up a little bit. Our net position isn't quite as high. But a little tighter ship, don't need to generate as much money. Oh, and then our capital budget. Oh, I hadn't updated that. Sorry, I had a number change. I will update that. I missed that. Sorry. That's $10 million. Just there's a little change at the last
match the other slide.
Yep. Match the other slide. And then our debt service budget. So I think everybody gets this. This is what we pay total principal and interest on all the debt we have. So that's the look for 26. I did want to go back to the capital budget for just a second. What's been nice in this capital budget process, usually this is a really tight kind of, it tests us to make sure we can do what we want. What's nice is the extra money is leaving us $1.6 million that we can just put in general system improvements. So if things do come up, we have funds set aside to deal with those. You know, if there's whatever cost overruns or a new project that comes up. And most likely what will happen is since we're not thinking we're going to generate as much money next year, this money might roll forward one more year and help with capital projects in 2027.
I thought I saw somewhere where that was actually, because I remember having a question about what that was, but then somewhere we said that was going to go to Lost Canyon Garage generator.
Yeah, there's some things that I've identified.
Okay.
So not all of this will roll, but some of it will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we've kind of thought about what we're going to use that for.
Yeah, we've already got some of it earmarked, but we're leaving a little bit of our powder dry.
Okay.
We're not fully committed on some of it yet. At the end, there's descriptions. Hopefully, I've got them. Sam helps me with all the write-ups of the capital projects. I like to play engineer at times, but I'm not very good at it.
But that's so your appendixes are in the actual budget, include the write-ups on all those capital projects and things like that.
Any questions on budgets?
All right.
Great job. Really, that's a lot of work.
A ton of work.
I can't believe you guys did all this and you guys had a convention in the middle of it, didn't you?
Yeah.
And Wipio was falling
apart. And Wipio was falling apart. Bitch is wanting new rating.
Yeah.
Which is, but, you know, it's all good. If I didn't like numbers, I shouldn't do this job, right?
Exactly.
That's right.
Okay. Am I done?
Yeah, I think just overall, we need a recommendation to the county council. Yes. We're on the schedule for November 3rd.
Positive recommendation of the 2026 tentative budget and the 2025 proposed amended budget to the district's governing board.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 That's unanimous.
I was going to say. When somebody wake up for it, I felt a little hurt. We good?
I was underwater for a minute.
Okay.
Maybe 10.
That's what I felt like the first 45 minutes when you guys were talking.
I came back to receive.
Yeah. All right.
It wasn't that I was falling asleep. It was that I was trying to wrap my head around what you were saying.
I just wanted to give you a quick update on a couple of the benefit vendor changes that we have going on for 2026. Dental, we're making a change from PEHP to Summit County's self-funded plan that's now going to be administered by Delta Dental. We've been having some issues with dentists no longer taking PEHP, my dentist in particular, Andy's dentist as well, Chris's as well. They've been really hard to work with and late paying. The county, we looked at going to the county last year, the benefit wasn't as rich, so we decided to stay with PEHP this year with moving to Delta Dental. The benefit is as good, if not slightly better. So our employees won't be losing anything by us moving, and the district will be saving $7,500 annually.
Wow. Right.
Summit County will bill us just like they do monthly for health insurance. So we're going to make that change. Another change, our employee assistance program. We've been using Intermountain EAP. Our usage hasn't been great on it. I don't think we get really the attention that we should. Park City Fire has been using Blomquist. Hale is the AAP that we're going to move to. They've been pretty happy with them. The county is also moving. They one of the things they tout is they have their own dedicated mental health staff on staff, and they have an interactive app that employees can use to chat with staff online and make appointments, so it's very user-friendly. And you also don't have a limit on the number of appointments you can have. They try to kind of use a model whereby they try to kind of move you through the process a little quicker, so they're not just giving you a couple appointments and then saying, okay, you go figure it out. So they're also, from what I understand and what I've heard from other of their customers, they make more appearances and coming and trying to be on site to get employees familiar with who they are. So they're willing to come out, go to the treatment plant, go to Lost Camp, just kind of be more visible. And so if you are making a call or you do have a crisis that you need to deal with, you don't feel like, you know, you have a little bit more familiar about who you're doing. So for a very small amount, it's $200 a year. We're going to go from $1,200 to $1,421 a year by moving to them. I think it's worth a change. Everything else is remaining the same. The only other thing I did want to note is that we did get our final health insurance numbers, and based on the interlocal agreement that we signed two meetings ago, we will have a slight premium increase of 1.5% starting in 2026. So, that's not.
Yeah,
I have one question on that.
Okay.
So, the $350, if people opt out, do they have to prove they have insurance elsewhere?
We do usually verify that they have
insurance. Okay. That's a requirement.
Yeah, and Jeremy. Yeah.
Good.
And the other, I just had them on there just so you could see what we do, but, you know, employees have access to retirement, fidelity, life insurance, vision insurance, accident, everything else has kind of remained the same. But yeah, that's it. Right.
Okay, and Andy, do you have comments on the new office and shop?
I do have comments. I purposely did not include photos, so we can have the big reveal. So I will invite you.
Chris is going to show.
I was going to show you some from today, but you just want to do
that. Teeing us up. Yeah. So our next scheduled board meeting will be in our new facility.
Wow.
And so I will invite you to come before 6 o'clock, because we're going to have some public hearings and other things.
Yeah.
To come and tour the facility. As a reminder, our open house will be December 10th at 10 a.m. We're going to...
December 10th. Okay.
December 12th. 10th.
The open house will be after the next...
12-10 at 10. We have that on the county council's schedule, too. We're going to invite people to come before and tour the facility, and then just do a little quick ribbon cutting or whatever water got, I don't know. to open the building. We are continue to be under budget on the budget of the building. Each day makes me question how close we'll be, but I still think we'll come under. It's interesting, some of the things that get forgotten, but
you had like a contingency number that you wanted to be under on the change orders.
We're still there. We're still there.
What was your number?
I don't remember what it was, but we still have about $200,000 on the builder side, and I don't know about on the owner side.
I can't remember.
But
yeah, it's good much the owners.
Right. I will get you there. I mean,
it seems like every month there's
there's great
one or two in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things when they put the windows in, the windows are a dark bronze or a black window, and they put in aluminum silver hinges. So if you drive by the front of the building, you see these nice black windows and you see silver hinges. $4,341 to switch those. But this is going to be a forever home, so I want to make sure we do it right.
And I guess when the like last 5% is where I would guess a lot of stuff's done.
Oh,
so yeah. I'm not surprised.
Of course.
And there is an incentive for the contractor to be under budget, because that builder contingency gets split 75-25, so there is an incentive for them. They are the county building inspector is scheduled to be there on Monday to sign off, and the fire department has to go through to get occupancy for our administration building, and then the shop will come shortly thereafter. I did email you all a copy of this year's employee survey. We can talk about that a little bit more next month. I can't believe that this year is quickly coming to an end.
Did you send us the report?
Yeah, it was in email.
Yeah. It wasn't on that.
No, I sent it ahead of time just so you can.
Okay, we'll talk about it next.
Yeah. Just reminded you that it was there. And that's all I have.
Hey.
Keep going.
Well, in the interest of time, does anyone have any questions on the department updates? I have a question on the engineering report. So what is the Atkinson Well 2 ASR?
Oh, gosh, I haven't spelled that out.
Yeah, like you do it on purpose.
No.
Just a cool one.
Good one. Yeah, okay. So ASR is acronym, stands for Aquifer Storage and Recovery, which can be a wide variety of projects. But the concept we're doing on our XML tube is during non-irrigation season, take treated surface water, excess capacity, and water rates associated with treatment, put high quality water in the well, then tend to have a higher producing model during irrigation season. So we applied for a pilot program through the Division of Water Rights, and recently submitted through our drinking water regulators. We've got an active injection permit with water quality. So all three of those agencies have to say, so it's got a lot of the data. And then we've got oil being actively worked on, a motor died
So it looks like there was a big crane by the one by my house.
Oh
yeah,
that one there. Yeah, that's the general concept of the project. So
when do you think you're going to go live?
I'd like to do it this off season, the way to the city. The water rights folks are, I don't know, I don't get it. But it's also our certainly my first time working with a project like this. So.
There haven't been a lot of them. They've been a handful in the state, right?
Yeah, they're all, I mean, this grand scheme of things, first, maybe like the smallest one.
Yeah.
I got invited to tour Metropolitan Water District's ASR project. When they were thrown out, they were from Bloomsburg. Of that, it's just like 10 times our annual.
We need a whole ranch update.
Well, that was my other question. Like, because that was yesterday, right? Oh, it didn't happen?
Uh-oh. Yeah, so we were prepared on Wednesday to install all the relocations to allow the box culverts to give a McLeod a creek drainage canal, whatever you want to call it, on the south side of the road. And the county pulled the plug on negotiating with the developer to come to terms with his medicine.
Yeah, they're not going to do anything until the developer processes their subdivision plan.
So we're tentatively on hold. Dave seems slightly more pessimistic than Mr. Mike Kendall does, but the earliest I think we do it is in the spring. And we're telling the, we're requesting the county to the project prior to May 15th. So, and otherwise, we'd be on the same program, kicking the project out now. Yeah, we're waking up to it.
But it was a good exercise in trying to prepare for this, that we had to shut down the line.
Or the thrust blocks to prepare for the actual water line movement, which I would prefer not to do. We were kind of shut down. So those are at the ground. I don't know how you will ever get them out. Seriously, good looking.
Okay.
Okay.
Right.
I was just going to highlight the photo of the two guys doing the mason work on the pad.
But he was like,
everyone was on the side of the fence, on the pipes. That's like above and beyond. And neither of them were dirty. It's like they dressed for the photo. That was, yeah, well done. And then we own, in Brian Beckett, we own that ditch, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then Joel's not here. So I don't have to say anything about the three breaks in Summit Park. But yeah. We miss you, Joel.
Joel's doing well. He's bored in Midway.
Bored?
Yeah.
That's the hot spot. Wow.
Okay. His wife's letting him out. I'm going to talk to him or something.
Glad you're keeping in touch with him.
Good. All right. Any other questions on Department update? Would anyone like to make a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned at 8:44. I can't believe we got through all that.
That was
2 hours.
That was
especially when it was